Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for April 23rd, 2024, NXT Spring Break-In, week one. We have week two coming up next week. Tonight we had week one, which ended with a brand new NXT champion. That's right. Trick did the whoop that trick thing and defeated Ilya Dragunov for the NXT championship. Close out the show tonight. I'm still riding high from it, to be honest with you. Glad to see Trick finally, and I'm going to use the cliche, finish his story here. We've been talking quite a bit about Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, especially the two of them, their feud that built up into Stand and Deliver. We'd thought, you know, throughout the course of the year, we were going to wind up seeing that match for the NXT Championship at Stand and Deliver. That did not wind up happening, which is totally fine. It ended up leading us here tonight to Spring Break-In with Ilya Dragunov, Trick Williams for the title. I thought it was a very good match. We'll get into all of that in a little bit. But here to talk about it with me, Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everyone. I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood, and I had to keep my celebrations tonight a bit more tame because I had to do the report. So I threw my hands up in the air real quick as the pin hit, or as the ref counted three, but then I immediately went back to having the type. So I guess at some point I'll celebrate the victory, but it was good to see. And you can find my report up at the Torch on the VIP side, as Kelly is unfortunately unable to be with us tonight.
Kelly is unfortunately unable to be here with us tonight. I said last week he should be here. Kelly's sick, guys, so wish Kelly a happy recovery, I guess. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Do you wish people a happy recovery just from the flu?
Wish them to get well soon.
Get well soon. Get well soon. That sounds more like what normal people would do. So, do that. Do that. Again, main event here, Trick Williams, the Dragunov, trying to pull it. Where is it in your – here it is, in your report, 11 minutes, 55 seconds, Trick Williams with a trick knee to Ilya Dragunov to become the new NXT champion. I didn't – like I said, I thought this was a fantastic match. Really hard hitting, a lot of false finishes here, very intense. I mean, going into the match, especially with the stipulation with Trick Williams, you kind of putting his quote career on the line here. I had a feeling Trick was going to win this. Not just because of the stipulation, but Ilya, is part of the part of the draft. Going up to the main roster, things like that. Just everything was being set up for Trick Williams to become champion here. So even though there were still a lot of false finishes and things like that that kind of played into the story. I didn't really think Ilya was going to wind up getting a three count on over Trick at any point. So there is that kind of overshadowed the match a little bit for me, just that kind of inevitability that Trick was going to win. But still, that said, I think they put on a great performance here tonight. Ilya is a good. I think it's a good send-off for him. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him, maybe next week in NXT is, in a segment maybe with Trick, kind of showing him, sign of respect and things like that. That's something I can kind of see the Ilya Dragunov character doing. Somebody beat him fair and square, and he's kind of a, he's kind of like a noble man like that, I guess, for lack of a better term right now. So I could certainly see something like that coming out of this. What's next for Trick? That's kind of the question coming out of this. Haven't had a whole heck of a lot of time to think about that yet, but I'm glad to see Trick in this spot. I think it's well deserved. And we've talked about this quite a bit on the show. He was in the shadow of Carmelo Hayes for a very, very long time, and he finally kind of broke out of that shadow. And this is, I think he broke out of that shadow a long time ago. I don't mean he necessarily did that tonight, but this is kind of that definitive, nail in the coffin, absolute proof. Like, I am a star. I'm not just a sidekick. I'm not, kind of living in Carmelo's shadow. I like it. I like where they wound up here. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Trick does as champion. Bruce.
So Dragunov did give him a show of respect after the match. He took the title at first, and I handed it back to him, gave him a hug and kiss on the cheek, and then rolled out. So I don't think we'll see Dragunov back on NXT, considering he's not supposed to be on spring break in night two, and then 2 weeks from now is supposed to be really the first proper NXT post-draft. So I'm thinking that show of respect was it. Now to the match itself, I put it a notch lower than you in terms of the in-ring, just because of there were two or three notable mishaps, specifically the one out of the powerbomb out of the corner that was botched by Dragunov, where he was delivering it, but somehow it didn't rotate enough, so all of Williams' body weight landed right on his chest. That spot was very, very odd. But, you know, I wrote that it wasn't a five-star match. It didn't need to be necessarily, because the story of this match is what really drove kind of the emotions of the match. And I really do like also the fact that throughout the entire night, they had people who are on Raw and SmackDown now but started NXT come back up here, show up, and discuss who they thought would win the match and why. And they were mostly on Trick's side, but you had a few that were going for Dragunov. I think Pete Dunne was the most dour of everybody who was pulling for Dragunov. But I think what that did was, if you're watching as a viewer, just all these people, and presumably, Michael Conforto just made a nice diving catch for the Giants. Presumably you've been watching NXT for a while, so you know all of these acts. And for them to come in and give their opinions on the match to the viewer probably adds a bit more gravitas and more meaning to an already meaningful match in the main event. So I like how that was done. I do like how the ending here, the ending spot in the match, was a callback to a different spot in a previous match between the two, where Trick went for the Trick knee, Ilya Dragunov set for the Torpedo Moscow, and Ilya Dragunov hit and hit first instead. Inside, of course, Trick hits first and ends up with the championship. So Trick Williams got the biggest pops of the night, both when he made his entrance and when he won the match. The second person to win, the person with the second biggest pop, we'll get to that when it happens. But it happened in the contract signing segment a little later on. So, or a little before this match, I should say. But and I wrote this in my report too, if you're looking ahead to night two, I feel like night one of spring break in, on paper, is better than night two. And it's going to be hard to top night one next week with what happened in both the first and the last matches. So I'm just going to be, not to say that they're going to be bad matches. There should be a lot of good action next week. I feel like there's going to be some kind of emotional letdown after the events of tonight. And I understand why, because they need Dragunov and Hayes to be available for the draft, but it just seems like night two is getting shortchanged here a little bit.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I mean, you know, I almost feel like this match should have taken place next week, kind of, you know, cap off spring breaking. I mean, this is the bigger angle, the bigger story kind of coming in. You know, the Trick Williams saga, I guess, has been going for quite some time. So, the Carmelo Hayes Trick Williams feud, I mean, they were positioning that and arguably I might even agree with them saying, you know, the Trick and Melo's best feud in NXT history. And this is kind of a continuation of that. I mean, obviously Carmelo Hayes wasn't anywhere to be found tonight. But it's kind of, you know, a bit of a continuation on that story and Trick Williams' journey. So I'm kind of surprised it wasn't. But that said, for what, you know, the reasons you brought up, you know, with the draft coming up and things like that, I can understand kind of moving things around a little bit.
I'm just looking at, the next week, and the main event at this point of what's announced is either going to be the Tag Team Championship match or Obafemi against Ivar. And so while we love Obafemi, it's just going to be, even if that is the main event, there's still just going to be, I feel like, it just doesn't feel like it has the same amount of oomph to it as tonight does.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. As much as we like Obafemi, it doesn't quite have the same gravitas to it. All right, let's see here. Let's go to an email. That's an email from Google about learning more about their updated terms of service. We'll go to another email instead from JB. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, Let me actually go to David Podnar's email. David's email is pretty quick. JB.
Maybe you should give out the info first if you haven't done that yet, Nate.
You know, come on. You pretend like I have no idea what I'm doing. I totally forgot. So thank you. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the show, certainly send us an email. You can also call in at 515-615-9345. And actually, we do have somebody in the caller queue that is wanting to speak. So actually, we're going to do that before we go to an email. Don't like to leave people hanging on the phone. So if you want to call us, I think I just said the number, 515-605-9345. Hit 1. That puts a little hand up next to your phone number on the switchboard. Lets me know that you want to be part of the show, just like area code 623. The number looks familiar, but I don't have my notes up with the area codes at the moment.
Hey, Nate. Hey, Dr. Bruce. This is Brian calling from Phoenix.
Brian, I like I said, I knew the number looked familiar. How are you doing, sir?
Doing fine, thanks. Hopefully you and Dr. Bruce are having a really good night. And Dr. Bruce, I'm not sure if you have your window open or not, so I'm waiting to hear the siren so I can get my drink on tonight.
Air conditioning's going, no worries. You're going to be very sober throughout this call.
The PWT drinking game. How many times does Nate mute himself, and how many sirens do we hear in the background of Bruce?
At least we're not doing how many times Nate appears shirtless. That'd be, yeah.
That happened once.
At once is way too many.
I'm going to turn my webcam back on, man.
So, Nate, and with the upcoming, and I'll throw in a plug later for the upcoming NXT 8 years back, you did get a shout-out on one of the shows where I know you were shirtless during one of the back shows, but we'll talk about that later. I hope you both have a really good night.
The legend of shirtless Nate is growing.
It is.
Again, I hope you both have a real good night, and hopefully all the listeners and have a good night as well. I'm going to talk about a couple of little older things. But the first thing I would like to mention, besides saying hi to you two, is that a shout-out to a friend of the Torch who recently passed away, Craig Kirkendall, Willie Chuck Jr., that was on Twitter. Good wrestling fan, and even a more of a good friend, too. So I'm going to shout him out.
Yeah, I saw the picture that you posted of the two of you guys today. It definitely sucks to hear. And definitely thoughts going out to everybody, friends and family.
That's sad.
Yeah, it really is.
Briefly, he's kind of those guys who kind of just started calling into some of the Torch shows and, you know, just asking good questions. And then he met out with some of us, you know, and during like outside of, well, it was wrestling related, you know, but it was pretty good to meet with him. So, Nate, you just said something like a minute ago, and you weren't on the show the week that I sent an email to Kelly and Dr. Bruce about this, but I'll still fall on my sword right now saying that Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa was the greatest NXT feud. And I know you just said that you said Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes was, but again, I will fall on that sword for Gargano versus Ciampa.
I did say I might potentially agree with them, but I'm the guy with the DIY tattoo, so I'm there with you, man. I think it might squeak out for my favorite, at least my favorite feud anyway. And
I'm just shaking my head at the disrespect to the Ascension versus Lucha Dragons right here.
So you know, you're a young guy, Nate. You can always change your tattoo to a Williams and Hayes tattoo. You know, you're young enough, you can always make that change. It'll look pretty decent.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Inside question, though, Nate, if you have your shirt off, will we see your tattoo or not?
No, this one is a nobody will do it for you tattoo on my forearm.
Okay, cool. All right, we won't bring the subject up anymore. So, again, I'm talking about two things that really happened. One happened last week, and then one that you talked about, that Kelly and Dr. Bruce talked about last week, and I'll wedge it in. Last week, I know Peyton Paxley, she was part of the three-way match that began the show, but I really liked, it wasn't really an interview, but like the promo that she had last week where she talked about she wasn't really Lyra Valkyria that she liked. It was more of the championship or maybe championship belt that she liked. And I'm not sure if I ever heard it being approached from that particular way before, but the interesting part, named Doc Bruce, is that when she named the list of champions and how she weaved her way around no champion that is currently in WWE or more specifically NXT. So, you know, when I first started listening to it, you know, she started with Charlotte. I'm like, okay, and I was tracking along, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. She didn't say redact it, name and redact his name, and redact his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and watched it a couple times, again, because I liked the whole premise of where she came from it. But I just thought that was interesting, especially in the Triple H era where, you know, they cut the names out. I will say this really quick, guys, before you talk about it, is that I never really had a problem with that because, you know, yes, a part of your history, that's the part that I, you know, raised my eyebrow about. But the other part is, why are we giving people free press? You know, WWE, you know, their time is expensive, and why should we throw a couple of hearts out to people who are no longer at the company? So, again, I see it both ways.
Yeah,
Nate, did you see it last week, the package from Tana Paxley?
Yeah, you and I did the show last week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was the week before that. I was at the hotel in Boston.
You remember the two people she didn't say, right?
I know one was Mandy Rose. I don't remember the other one off
Paige.
The top of my head.
She didn't say Paige.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I also see it from both ways because, you know, from a business perspective, yeah, why would you want to give, you know, free press to somebody that doesn't work for the company? It's something, you know, shortly after Chris Jericho left the company, I think it was even before he signed with AEW, to be honest. But he left the company and they take him – or no, actually, I think it was after he signed with AEW. But they took him out of the opening credit, you know, the opening then, now, forever thing. And people were all like, oh, my God, they're erasing Chris Jericho from history. And Chris – you know, and I don't agree with every single thing Chris Jericho has to say better or for worse. But, one of the things he said was, you know, yeah, I don't work for the company anymore. Why would they promote me? They should promote one of their – you know, one of – theirs, their performers. And I kind of, like, once he said it like that, because at first I was like, yeah, they're erasing Chris Jericho. But once he said it, I'm like, no, that makes sense. So from that perspective, I totally get it. Mandy Rose, she didn't really have a super great exit from the company, I guess, you know, very quick and all of that with, you know, the photos she posted online and whatnot. So I guess I can kind of see that. Paige, you know, I don't know. I mean, she's had her issues in and out of the ring and whatnot. She's obviously got her act together and whatnot. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to just kind of assume that it was simply, you know, a matter of not, you know, of kind of, you know, the latter. They just don't want to give, any TV time to any performers that really aren't theirs. And that said, I mean, I remember recently hearing Daniel Bryan, like hearing the name Daniel Bryan on WWE TV. And I don't remember in what context it was, but there was some comparison that somebody made very recently to Daniel Bryan. So it's like they're making exceptions in some places, but maybe not in others. I don't know necessarily why. But yeah, at least that's how I see it. Like, you know, I kind of personally see it from that business perspective. Coke wouldn't be sitting there, you know, name dropping Pepsi Max. So, you know, Bruce.
I've never been one of those who's like, oh my gosh, look, this person's added to the opening. Oh, they've been removed from the opening. I never cared. I only found out about this after people put it on Twitter or something like that. Cause I don't pay enough attention to these opening things to even to care, because to me it's just a waste of time until we actually enter the show. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, fair enough. Brian, anything else?
Yeah, I have one other point to bring up I want you two to discuss. And I'm sorry, Nate, I forgot you were on that. You and she went back on last week. Really quick, though, the other two former NXT champions that were not that Tatum Paxley didn't mention were two sisters, which was Sasha Banks and Ember Moon. Those weren't mentioned as well, or pictures weren't shown as well. So I'll go to my second and my last point. So I brought this up on I sent a question into the Fix, PW Torch, VIP exclusive, the Fix mailbag, and I put it one way, but I'm going to give it a twist to this way. So, again, last week and then this week as well, you know, leading up to the draft, I was reading Doc Bruce's recap on the website and talking about the draft and this being the last episode before the draft. And One thing that I know you didn't mention it last week. I'm not sure if you mentioned it this week yet, but remember that NXT is switching over to the CW in the fall. So there's a reason why they might want to, or there's a reason why they might want to stack or add some well-known names, because CW, this is going to be a tough one, as you both know, because of being, yes, a network, it's a network, but it's like on the, you know, the second tier of networks. And with CW, from the way I understand it, that they're pushing over to being like a lot more sports orientated. So this is going to be huge for NXT or WWE, but NXT more specifically to be there. So I'm going to ask you this question. Don't laugh too hard as I say this. And maybe it's got kind of tinted from what happened last night. But what if Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch move over or move down to NXT with the switch to CW, and they, you know, for 18 to 24 months, they actually stay in NXT, you know, helping out with all the younger wrestlers, but being there as wrestlers there as a presence. So what I'll do is I'll hang on and listen and see what you think about that. Again, I'm sorry you're giggling in the background as I ask that question, but, you know, there's salary things and things like that we can discuss. But just to have two huge names kicking off NXT down in CW, you know, a lot of high stakes here. So, again, Doc Bruce and Nate, thanks a lot again for always all what you do. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, Brent. Anytime, Ed. I don't remember if it was last week or if it was a week before. Well, it wouldn't have been the week before because I wasn't on, but it must have been last week. But I think we were talking about, or at least I brought it up at some point, you know, potentially having a couple bigger names come down to NXT and kind of assist with making it a third brand again. That kind of seems like the direction that they want to go. Obviously, NXT is not really involved in the draft in the same way that Raw and SmackDown are. It's more that it's kind of being positioned as like a feeder system, I guess, which it is, but it's not, you know, a full equal brand. If they eventually want to get there, which I don't know if I agree with, but if that's where they want to go and they want to make it a third brand that isn't necessarily developmental or at least not perceived as developmental, you know, potentially maybe touring again or whatnot, I think it's a good idea to move some bigger names down to NXT. I'm torn with Seth and Becky because there's the selfish part of me that covers NXT and NXT being, you know, my favorite, you know, my personal favorite promotion to watch. I'd love to see them in NXT every week, you know. But I think they're really valuable in the main roster. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you can rotate them out. There's plenty of talent for them, you know, for Raw and SmackDown to go around and kind of give other people time to shine. I'm just a little torn. Again, I don't know exactly who I would necessarily say to bring down. Seth and Becky, I guess, as good as anybody else. You know, two of the bigger names in the company. I think just the fact that they, you know, would be on the show would bring some eyeballs to Wednesday nights. I think personally, if they want to get more eyeballs in the show and build into that third brand, they want to do some more. They want to get, you know, get some stars on the show, but they also should weave some of the stories into the main roster like they have in, you know, the past, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 months or so. You know, what kind of things are, you know, mingling a little bit with the main roster. You know, I know there's a couple times like Trick and Mello showed up on I think it was SmackDown. You know, kind of things like that, you know, almost make it NXT can't miss. Again, don't know the best way of getting there, but I think that's at least a solid strategy in my mind. Bruce, how about you?
When it comes to the draft in general, I'm just going to say this, and I think it's what I said last week, it's that they really need to figure out what the rules are going to be, because I understand they want to make NXT the third brand again. But how do I put it? So if you put NXT out there right away, what's to stop them from drafting a Damian Priest if he's available, you know, or a Cody Rhodes if he's available, or a Bayley if she's available, right? They're got to put parameters here, because if they do indeed do that, then that's going to create, I don't, they have these contracts with the TV networks for a reason. The TV networks do have some say in what goes on in terms of who they want to see on their show, not in terms of the booking, but they kind of just say, you know, we would like to have this person on our show. Let's have this person on our show. So at least that's my understanding. And that being the case for me, those parameters make it unlikely that a big splash would happen. And it's more likely that after several rounds where you have, you know, I think Raw or SmackDown, Raw gets 3 picks or SmackDown gets 2, it's usually how it's done, something like that. After several rounds and you have the top-end talent go, then you have more people that are upper mid to just the mid-card available. I think those are people you are more likely to see. And I don't think it's a, a surprise that people like Natalya, people like Ivar, people like the Good Brothers, who are a little lower on the card, people like the AOP, the Final Testament, people like LWO are being seen more and more on NXT. I think those are probably the level of people, and even some of them probably will be drafted to NXT. I think those are the people to look at in terms of who's going to come. Now, the contract with CW, that could play into things a little bit, but CW still isn't a huge network. It's bigger than they get more people than NXT has right now in terms of USA, but that isn't to say that they're on one of the big three, right? Or even the big four if you want to add ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, the fourth. So to me, I think if you're an NXT fan, you might want to temper your expectations on who might be coming down to NXT and also be prepared to see some of the people that you already expect to go to SmackDown or Raw, but also some you might not expect, like, you know, Kiana James might be going for all we know. I wouldn't be surprised that OTM is gone here soon, even though Jada Parker is getting a push. So don't be surprised that some of the people that you think are going to be here a while are also gone.
Yeah, I think that's honestly more likely.
But yeah. I'm going to be just here for the entire ride of Roxanne Perez being jilted that she did not get drafted even as the NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. I'm here for that. No, and I think what you say is the most likely scenario. You know, I think what I was talking about is really kind of if they want to move in a direction to get a bunch of eyeballs on them, but on NXT and kind of develop it into a bigger brand. But I don't think that's a likely scenario. I think what you're talking about, kind of the level of I could see DIY getting drafted back to NXT.
Shawn Michaels on the show tonight?
You know, I think it was, actually. Shawn Michaels
also
showed up.
Also, do you know when the TV contract with CW starts? Is it beginning of 2025? Is it end of 2024?
Oh, man, I don't know. Brian, you're still unmuted if you happen to know.
I thought it was this fall. I thought it was
okay.
Like in September. But
I think
don't
if it was closer to the I think if it was closer to the draft, then I think we might see more people going down. But the space between now and CW, the debut on CW, I think also lends credence to the notion that they're not going to make any big moves to NXT.
October 2024. Yep. So, you know, I think that makes sense. But Brian, thank you very much as always. Any follow-up or anything else for us?
Thanks for taking too much of your time. Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Dr. Bruce. Hopefully everybody has a really good night. I'm sorry. And also listen to this Saturday's NXT 8 Years Back, where Kelly and Tom Stout talk about NXT from 8 years ago. That's why it's called 8 Years Back, right? And
yes, it is.
They will. Yeah. This week they'll be doing a movie trivia question about top 10 movies from Patrick Swayze. And besides the wrestling, there's always a movie trivia question as well, too. So, again, guys, have a really good night. Thanks a lot for always. I really appreciate both of you, and talk to you both of you later.
All right, Brian. Thank you very much, as always, man. All right. So now let's move on to the email that I was talking about a little bit ago from David Podnar, and then we'll move to JB's email. David says, a great goodbye to NXT for Dragunov and a coronation for Trick. The pre-match interviews and the bump with Damian gave the extra for this match. And the crowd was so into it. We expected this to be the ending. Carried really well. The last sentence doesn't quite make sense. We expected this to be the ending, but carried really well. That was his email. I think this, like we said, I think this is a good goodbye for Dragunov, and a really good beginning for Trick Williams here. I like the build of the match, with the interviews tonight. Actually, I haven't mentioned it yet, but I know Bruce brought it up, with Gargano coming, or excuse me,
Shawn Michaels
showing up. Tyler Bate. I wanted to call him Butch. Pete Dunne. Wow. I hate myself right now. Peter Dune. I thought that was a great touch, and kind of added to that moment to actually see them out in the crowd and they're rooting on Trick. Anything on this email? I know we kind of talked a lot about this already.
Just that Julius Creed was really, really into that Uranagi from the barricade on the barrier on through the announce table.
I don't think I noticed his reaction.
He was the one who was pounding on the barricade afterward, because he was so into it.
Oh, okay. Even though they replayed it and stuff, I think I even went back and watched it again. I don't think I noticed that.
Question.
But
wait,
you watched
Raw, right?
Last night, yeah.
Diamond Mine, the Creed brothers specifically, they're kind of being more geared toward being heels, right?
Yeah.
So it's it's interesting to see them here as just full of faces. Even Pete Dunne maintained his dourness. I just was kind of,
yeah.
I even mentioned in my report that I found it odd that they were playing faces here when they've been leaning heelish in Raw.
I honestly didn't even cross my mind. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, I've got a friend of mine who's even though we've been friends for years and years and years and years, and they've watched wrestling with me and things, that they're just now finally going, I'm a wrestling fan. So I think Monday nights is going to be our actually sit down and watch wrestling. So I'll be doing that, paying more attention to Raw. Let's go to an email. Let's go to JB's email. They said we're going to read that at the beginning of the show, and here we are, like a half an hour in. I still haven't done it yet. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. He's got 5 points here. First one, it's weird to me that it feels almost – let me start that again. It's weird to me that it almost feels like NXT frames the main roster tag teams more serious and consistently than the main roster does a lot of the time. It's a little weird to me, too. I wish they'd put a little bit more focus on tag team wrestling. I like tag team wrestling. I think there's some great chemistry and psychology and things to great tag team in tag team wrestling. So it is a little bit of a shame that the main roster WWE has never really put a huge focus on. I was kind of hoping maybe that'll change under Triple H, but I mean he's always been a singles guy. Not always with Sean, but you know what I mean. He's even when he was part of DX, he's still more perceived as a singles, I guess. Number two, NXT did a great job framing Trick to start tonight with returning a previous NXT legends, the phone call with his mother in the hospital, and simply the way that the announced team talked about him. Number three, does Lola Vice and Natalya live up to what we've come to expect an NXT underground match to be?
What do we expect that to be is the question.
That was actually my question. I just think both the length and the story of the feud doesn't really match the aura of what the match is supposed to be, and the contract signing tonight really relied on too many gotcha moments with low-hanging fruit like cursing. What does Baron Corbin continue to do in NXT if he isn't drafted back to the main roster, whether it's with or without Braun Breaker? He's gone through quite a few feuds already. Could his next feud potentially be with someone in the wings to treat somebody in the wings to debut on NXT TV, or even potentially with Javon Evans? Corbin can be easily transitioned back to heel if he isn't tagging with Breaker. And number five, what do we make of the news that Von Wagner's released from NXT and that Mr. Stone will be likely transitioning to a producing role backstage? It looks as though Scion, Quinn, and Cameron Grimes are also in the most recent mass release, as was Xia Li and Jinder Mahal, Veer Mahan, Sangha, and I think that's it. He says, as always, love the show and go VIP. So we've talked a lot about Trick Williams and everything, so we'll kind of gloss over that. Lola Vice, Natalya, does it live up to what an NXT Underground match should be? So I know what he means by this. Like, an NXT Underground match is supposed to be a blow-off of a feud. It's supposed to be looked as, like, a real type of a fight, something almost akin to, like, a UFC fight, something like that. We all remember, well, I don't know, maybe we don't, but I know I do remember Raw Underground, where it was, you know, the Underground concept was first, you know, introduced, and that was kind of the way that it was presented. It was almost like a fight club. So I understand what JV's saying, and I don't think it has really lived up to that. I understand why they're doing it, Lola Vice being, you know, former MMA fighter and all of that. So it kind of, it's almost like giving her a match type, you know, like Undertaker casket match or something like that. So I get it, and I see what they're doing, but I think they should be doing it yet, at least with this feud. With Natalya, you know, she's a great, you know, real first big feud for Lola Vice. You know, Natty just speaks for herself. I mean, I can't say anything about Natty that you guys don't already know. I also just don't think that this match or this feud has the stank on it, if you will, to really warrant a match like NXT Underground. At least with the build that they've given it so far. I mean, I think maybe if they gave it a little more time or something like that. But even then, I don't know if Lola Vice is necessarily ready to pull off a little bit more time, on the mic and things like that. She's good. But I don't know if she can necessarily be put in that spot to, like, you know, carry like a 30-minute segment into a match or something like that, you know. Natty certainly can, but, you know, I'm not sure if Lola Vice is there yet. She may be. I just don't know. Baron Corbin in NXT, I think if he stays in NXT without Bron Breakker, I think he will kind of go back to his old kind of old NXT gimmick in a way, where he was a bit of a gatekeeper, you know. He had that undefeated streak, and then it was the feud with Bull Dempsey there for a while because they were both undefeated, and I think maybe that's what they
roll up to Austin Aries,
yeah, and things like that, you know. So I think maybe, because I mean, he's the type of guy that I feel like wants to build talent. You know, he's a company guy. He's, you know, obviously he wants to, you know, put himself over too, I think, you know, as do most wrestlers. But I think he's the perfect person to be in that role to kind of build people. You know, he has name equity. He's got equity in his name. So I think to put over some new stars, that'd kind of be the role he's in. You know, maybe he gets a few token wins here and there to build that credibility back up. And then, you know, he loses his major feuds and things like that. Kind of like Blair Davenport, but we'll get there. And then Von Wagner being released, you know, Mr. Stone being backstage. You know, Von Wagner, there's a part of me that hates to see him go, because I wanted to see the progression of Von Wagner. You know, he's the Von Wagner character has been hit or miss at times, but I think, you know, towards the end here of the Von Wagner run, I mean, he kind of found a stride, he was a little entertaining. I was on the ride with the Von Wagner character, and I'll be honest, I was a little bit disappointed. I think that was the biggest, well, Cameron Grimes, I think, was the biggest disappointment for me out of those releases, but they were also weren't really doing anything with him the last year. So it's not really surprising. Von Wagner, on the other hand, is a little surprising to me. Just because of the, you know, where they were kind of positioning him and you know, the fact that he was a free agent. I mean, even though they didn't really use that, but I mean, the fact that they thought of him at one point to be a free agent, you know, to go from brand to brand to brand, he might be able to bring value there. It's kind of surprising. Mr. Stone backstage, I think it's a perfect spot for him. You know, he could certainly manage somebody else, but I feel like that really hasn't. The only one that really worked with was Von Wagner. I mean, everybody else that he managed just kind of didn't really work. But he's, you know, great wrestling mind, so I think backstage producing is good for him. So, Bruce, so on, so Lola Vice, Baron Corbin, Von Wagner.
I'm going to touch on the tag team thing, too, because you didn't throw to me on that one.
Oh, shit, I didn't? I'm sorry.
No, you did not. So the context for this question is that they aired a vignette for the Final Testament, and Paul Ellering said they're coming for all the titles and clearly stated that AOP wants a tag team championship. So actually, Nathan Fraser were in the back or in the locker room, and they were ranting about that vignette and how Malik Blade was like, yeah, we can't let these teams come in and just take what we've been fighting for so long. And then the Good Brothers come in, and Luke Gallows, ever so present Luke Gallows, goes, yeah, we can't just let these teams come in and try and take the titles. And I'm just howling with laughter because it's pure comedy that he's saying that. He's saying that for a specific reason, right? And it's to poke fun at them because that's exactly what the Good Brothers just did not too long ago. I thought that was one of the lines of the night for me. When it comes to NXT Underground, it really depends on what you think NXT Underground should be, right? The last one that we had, I believe, was Dijak versus Eddie Thorpe. We really haven't seen much of Eddie Thorpe since then. We've seen a lot of Dijak. And while that match had its moments, I don't think it was what we thought it would be in terms of Underground. So it looks to me that, and that was before the full transition into, as they subtly have hinted at, is called the Triple H era. It seems like Underground is a bit more tame compared to what it was intended to be when they initially started. So I'm not as Natalya said tonight, maybe they should have channeled the Dungeon and had more of a Dungeon-style match. I think what you do with the Underground, you have sort of the baggage of the name and what people remember of it, and also this notion that it has to be more MMA-style, where you go Underground, just tends to be more thought of as physical, brutal, more shoot-style. I think that may have worked better. I've even been saying this from the beginning of their feud, they should just go with a Dungeon match. But, I guess we'll see how it plays out. I'm not too concerned about how the quality will be considering who is in the match. My concern is the penchant for Shawn Michaels to always utilize the people around the ring for any kind of spot or spots during these kind of matches. And we kind of saw that tonight too, where Carmen Petrovic threw Lola Vice onto the entire group of men on one side of the ring facing the entrance. So that's my concern with that.
You know, you're wrong. It's Johnny Gargano making those decisions.
That is correct. It is Johnny Gargano because, as we all know, Shawn Michaels is back on Raw with DX as they faced Awesome Truth for the Tag Team Championship.
Regeneration X.
Regeneration X. And now that we talked about that, I completely forgot about what the last comment was on. The last question was his fifth one.
Hold on. Let me get back there. Von Wagner. Von Wagner,
oh,
Mr. Stone, and
this
he also brought up
two or three years ago.
Yeah,
that's really all I gotta say.
Yeah, not fair. Fair. All right, so there we go with JB's email. Thank you very much, as always, JB. And we'll go to The Doctor Is Late, which is what he has titled his email. Kevin Catani says, "Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. Pardon my delay. I have bedtime duty tonight. I thought tonight was a great show full of main roster cameos, good in-ring action, and storyline development. What do you all make of the UFC partnership battleground? How will we remember this event a year from now? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Kevin Catani, PhD. So I just want to say he has bedtime duty tonight, but because he has children. It's not a weird thing. Just because he has kids. I don't know. I read that and I was like, if people don't know, they might be wondering. But anyway, UFC, the UFC thing for Underground. So, I mean, I don't really know a whole hell of a lot about UFC. I'll say that straight up. But I think this is cool. I mean, you know, obviously they're both under TKO Sports. So, you know, why not utilize a venue that I'm assuming UFC owns with the way that they were describing it. I don't know that for a fact. I might be just talking out of my ass. But let's, you know, assume they own it for a minute. That makes sense. Save a little bit of money for the parent company and you know, whatever. I think that certainly works. I'm curious to see where they go with it. If they kind of like, so again, I was just talking about my buddy, my buddy that, you know, kind of started watching wrestling again. You know, we saw that commercial last night. You saw the ad for that last night on Raw. And the first thing that they said to me was, oh, you know, it'd be wicked cool if they put like the ring in the octagon, you know, and it, like they should, you know, kind of make the octagon as part of it, you know. And I'm like, it'd be cool, but I don't really see them doing that. You know, I don't know if you could really build a ring in an octagon, if how sturdy that's going to be, if it's really going to work. the logistics and all that. But I could certainly see them, you know, I even said this to them, you know, I could even see, you know, them bringing like a fight pit match, or even NXT Underground, you know, something like that. Probably not where we're seeing that, you know, next week, but, you know, fight pit, which is kind of the closest thing to an octagon style match, in NXT or in WWE. I could see them doing something like that. Kind of something to, pay homage to the UFC arena that they're going to be in. You know, outside of that, I mean, I don't know what else they could do. I mean, I don't see them, you know, using an octagon or anything like that in the course of the show. But yeah, you know, as far as how we'll remember it, I don't know. Maybe it'll just be that show that happened at the UFC arena one time. Bruce.
So if I remember correctly, the UFC Apex is connected to their training center in Vegas. So it's kind of like their version of the PC to a certain extent. The Apex is also okay. Where they were holding shows during the pandemic when there were no fans, aside from when they went to Saudi Arabia, because I don't think Saudi Arabia has had the restrictions. So,
oh, yeah, that is a tiny little venue.
Yeah. Think about the Thunderdome. It's basically the UFC's Thunderdome. And that's what you just to give you a picture in your head. In terms of how will we remember this in a year, asking me to remember something from a year ago is a fool's errand, all right?
Yeah.
So we won't remember this in a year. We'll remember it when they show highlights for next year's Battleground, what happened at this year's Battleground. That's when we'll remember it. I'm not going to remember it. Now, in terms of, like I said, this marketing, when you talk about the octagon and inside the ring and all that, I just think like, oh, if you go to eight sides, it's too much like TNA when they have their six-sided ring. The integrity of the ring, like you said, there could be an issue with that. I just feel like doing something like that is way too gimmicky. If you're going to have the octagon, have it up near the entrance ramp area just to give viewers an understanding of where you're located, but don't have it be the ring. And then you could still use the octagon for some kind of gimmick match where they fight their way back into, you know, back there and into it and do some things in there. But I would think that it would be a terrible mistake to try and make the octagon a focal point of the night in terms of the matches being in it. Now, if you want to have matches in it without the ring being there, okay, I can take that. I can understand that a bit because that is definitely more of this NXT Underground feel, what they want with the fight pit, and it channels the more shoot vibe feel of an MMA match, right? MMA
fight. So are you talking about not having a ring at all and using the octagon on the light?
Yes.
Because
of the fact that you are already at the Apex, I feel like, and the partnership and the crossover, the opportunity is there. You just got to do it right. And I feel like having the ring inside, no. But having the octagon itself be the ring for the night, you won't be able to use any rope attacks, sure. But that could lead to a different style of wrestling. And with the underground matches and fight pit, there are no ropes anyway. So it could be, if they do something like that, we actually might remember it a year from now as the show that had these dope matches or the show that had these real weird matches because there were no ropes. I think either way you can make it memorable if you do go with the octagon as the ring, but not with the ring inside the octagon.
I don't know. There's a part of me that's going, ooh, like I could see some really cool stuff coming out of that. You know, people using the octagon in a way that was not really, wasn't designed for it. You know, people jumping off the top of the octagon and stuff like that. You know, things that I guess I've seen highlights of people jumping over the octagon after a match and things like that. But,
The octagon is a little bigger than – they would have to use a smaller octagon, which I think the Apex has, and I think that is still a little bigger than what they normally use in the ring. There would be – but if you put people on there that have sort of amateur wrestling backgrounds, jiu-jitsu backgrounds, boxing backgrounds, any sort of MMA background, they might be the most comfortable ones in there. Who knows? I just think that's more intriguing than just putting a ring in the octagon or just having, a ring with the octagon nearby as a prop.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, there's a part of me that's like, I can think of some really cool stuff that could come out of that, you know, with the full wrestling show. But then there's also part of me that's like, I feel like there could be certain parts of that could be kind of boring, you know, without being able to use ropes and things like that, you know, and an easy way to escape the ring. You know, it would be like having a night of cage matches. Every single cage, you know, every single match on the show is a cage match. So I feel like there could be some cool stuff, but it could be get boring. And then I also have no idea what it would be like to take a bump at an octagon. I've taken bumps in the ring before, and they're not pleasant, but I feel like an octagon is probably a hell of a lot more stiff. So like that could also be something, you know, where they may not be willing to take some, you know, bigger risks and jumping off the octagon and things like that. So,
I mean, you can have the underneath the canvas as much as you need to and still make it look like a regular octagon. You could just elevate parts of it so it doesn't look as padded. But real quick, Nate, when we go to the next, after you started me on the next question, just put yourself on mute and go to YouTube and type in Superman Punch off cage. I think it was Anthony Titus versus Benson Henderson. And then you'll see that there are some creative things you could do with the cage.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I think I've actually seen that highlight because like as soon as I said seeing people jump off the cage, like somebody throwing a punch off the top of the cage ran through my head.
It wasn't the top of the cage. He kicked himself off of the side of the cage to get more momentum and landed a Superman punch that floored his opponent. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll check it out. I'll check it out. All right. So that said, let's keep going. Oh, I got to find my notes. What did I do with my notes? It's been so long since I looked at them. I was reading emails. Baron Corbin versus Lexus King. We saw Lexus King go over at 5 minutes and 37 seconds to coronation. This is kind of tying into what I was talking about a little bit earlier ago with, you know, with Baron Corbin. I think if he is going to stick around in NXT, you know, in this capacity, I think this is kind of the role that he's going to be in, you know, kind of a perceived as a bit of a hurdle for people and you know, a bit of a gatekeeper, but he's really, you know, going to be there to put people over. You know, Lexus King, I feel like he's lost more matches than he's won at this point, which, you know, I guess maybe for the gimmick is fine. He can kind of, you know, figure out a way to overcome it with, you know, a way to talk himself out of it, you know, losses and whatnot. Which, you know, he's kind of done in the past. But yeah, I think like, you know, like I said, I think for Baron Corbin, this kind of the kind of where we will, you know, see him wind up if he does wind up staying in NXT. Yeah, again, thought it was a, you know, decent match. It was, again, you know, relatively short, but yeah, you know, go ahead, talk about this and I'll go look up the Superman punch thing.
I guess that means I need to actually talk about this match because I wasn't going to talk about this match. I really just wanted to say that, you know, Baron Corbin, he went from being in one of the hottest acts in NXT to now losing his first singles match outside of the Wolf Dogs to Lexus King, who I understand he has a pedigree behind him, but he hasn't shown too much of a lot of anything. And even in the ring, he's still a bit boring. When he does that running lariat to the back of the neck, I don't know why, but he just looks so awkward and funny to me that I don't know. Just precipitous downfall for Baron Corbin, considering he was just a tag team champion, what, 2-3 weeks ago? And here he is now all of a sudden jobbing to Lexus King, who hasn't really won any of his big feuds or any of his big matches. Which is unfortunate for Baron Corbin, but also it's pretty much right where we expect him to be. So I think it's just unfortunate for him that he's putting someone like, you know, Baron Corbin, as much as some of us lament his near decade in WWE, he's a good in-ring worker. He gives lots of impactful moves and being very safe. He has more talent right now than Lexus King does, and I think potential-wise right now, Lexus King isn't showing as much as Baron Corbin has right now, so it is a bit odd that they are – I do get it. They know what they have with I guess to a certain extent, they know what they have with singles wrestler Baron Corbin, and they want to see what they can get with Lesnar King. It's just really hard right now to buy into Alexis King, and I'm not sure what he needs to do to change that, but I don't know. A tainted victory over Baron Corbin didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely hear you there. You know, he comes into the WWE with kind of like all this pomp and circumstance, and I feel like Alexis King just really hasn't been able to deliver on that. You know, and I don't know if it's necessarily his fault or the positioning of him in the company or what, but I don't know. I thought he was going to have a bit of a bigger impact when, you know, they were originally airing those Alexis King vignettes before he debuted. And even within the first couple weeks after his debut, I thought he was going to eventually have a bigger impact. And here we are. So I don't know. Maybe with the draft and people moving around and shifting around, that'll change. Maybe he needed some time to kind of adapt to WWE style or what have you. I don't know. But, we'll see. We'll see what the future holds for Alexis King. All right. Let's see. What else have we got here? Sol Ruka versus Blair Davenport in a beach brawl, not a bleach brawl, but a beach brawl, which is essentially a no DQ match with a whole bunch of inflatable pool equipment around the ring, because inflatable pool equipment is exactly what you want to use for a weapon in a wrestling match. But, you know, whatever. It being a gimmick match and kind of, you know, one to put Sol Ruka over is what it is. I personally am not a huge fan of these matches, you know, like a beach brawl where you put a whole bunch of just gimmicks around the ring. I can't think of, another one I can think of was the Jeff Jarrett in China, you know, what was it, the kitchen match or whatever the hell it was. It was kind of, you just get specific weapons around the ring or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. They don't really do anything for me. Just give me a no DQ match and then have them find
interesting. Miracle on 34th Street fight match.
Yeah, like just have them find cool things around the arena and you know, beat themselves up. That's what I want to see, but whatever. That said, I thought Sol Ruka looked great here. She's still maybe shaking off a little bit of ring rust or whatnot, but I mean, like some of the moves that she can pull off the ring are they're just really cool. Like you don't see a lot of people move the way that she can move. The Soul Snatcher, I don't care how many times I see it. It's impressive every single time. I think if she's able to kind of shake off the rest of this ring rust, which I'm pretty confident she will. I think there's big things for her. I keep talking about my buddy who got back into wrestling, but it's really kind of cool to see, to talk wrestling with somebody that's watching with fresh eyes, you know, and that doesn't really know other things than what I've told them, over the years, although they are all of a sudden now diving deep into wrestling. But, just talking with them over the past, couple weeks about Sol Ruka. Sol Ruka and Roxanne Perez are the two that they're like the biggest, like the over the moon about, super, super excited about. For them and Sol Ruka, it's the moveset and it's the attitude, that really hooked them. And it's kind of the same for me. You know, she's got a cool gimmick, and a really cool moveset. Maybe needs a little bit work on, mic skills or whatever, but, I can see this gimmick, this particular character, like massively getting over with kids, and even adults too. But I can really see this being a gimmick that the kids really gravitate towards. It's fun, it's relatively clean, and she's kind of like a real life superhero with the way that she moves around the ring. Bruce.
So this was the one match that was real gimmicky out of all the matches tonight, and I was actually surprised that we didn't have more gimmicky matches, considering when we have these theme shows, they really like to play into the theme, whether it's having a Devil's Playground match for New Year's Evil, or
zombies
on Halloween Havoc. Yes, like,
yeah.
So there's that. I do feel like they got most of the gimmickry out of the way in the first half of the match. And they also use boogie boards and surfboards as weapons, which I'm pretty sure do hurt a little bit. So,
no, they don't. I have whacked my sister so hard with a boogie board, and she's still alive.
Okay, alive? Jeez. How much do you hit your sister? Goodness gracious. Let's see.
No,
we're so,
I love my sister.
So the match itself, gimmicks aside, I did like what we saw. My thing is, and you remember from the very beginning of this feud, I've been against it because my thing is both of these women should be pushed in different ways. Both of these women should be winning matches and winning feuds and be on separate paths toward being in the main event. They shouldn't be facing each other at least right away, right? I felt like this should have been a feud more toward being a championship eliminator for the two, and then you could channel in the story of, hey, remember when Sol Ruka was knocked out of action by Blair Davenport in story? Even though it was really that she had a torn ACL outside of it. So I do – that is the thing that I don't like about what happened here. It is the one thing that I feel took away from the match. However, I've been – you know, I keep talking about I'm a fan, Davenport, in terms of her in-ring and what she brings different – completely different to any other woman on the roster. With Ruka, she keeps getting better and better. Still needs not as polished as Davenport, of course. Davenport's been doing this for a lot longer than Sol Ruka, and Davenport is still pretty young, so that tells you how much experience she has. But then you talk about the Soul Snatcher, and I think what made it more impressive tonight is that instead of doing it out of the corner, she did it springboard style off the middle rope, and that's a little more difficult to do because you don't have the stability of the corner. So that was pretty impressive, and if you watch, Blair Davenport cleverly held one of the boogie boards underneath her so that the Soul Snatcher landed her face on the boogie board for added impact. So if you didn't catch that, go back and watch that little replay, and you'll see she kind of sneakily slides that boogie board just underneath her face in time to take the Soul Snatcher. But yeah, I just think that right now this was not the feud to have gone to, and they could have gone to different people. Like, Sol Ruka could have gone after Kiana James, for example. And Blair Davenport could have won something over Kalani Jordan or Fallon Henley. I understand Fallon Henley is in a different story right now, but either way, Blair Davenport's done crap to almost every single face on the women's roster, so there's definitely ways in the story you can bring that into play.
All right, let's keep moving here. Let's talk about... Oh, yeah, well, I know you want to talk about it. Let's talk about the NXT Underground contract signing. So we have a match next week for Spring Break-In Week 2, and it just occurred to me that Break-In is only spelled with one K. I've been typing
it
with two
Ks. Exactly. The first couple of times I did, I typed it with two Ks the last couple of weeks. I was like, oh, crap, I saw the graphic and it had one K.
Yeah, I just happened to read it. I was actually looking up the match card for next week. I want to at least talk about that, and, you know, or at least mention what the card is for next week at some point. And I brought it up, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. But anyway, what the hell was I talking about? I just threw myself off with a K. The NXT
the
Underground
contract
signing. So next week at Spring Break-In with 1K, week two, we're going to see a match with Natalya versus Lola Vice. Natalya has Carmen Petrovic in her corner and has for a couple few weeks now as we've built up to this. Lola Vice, as she came out, to sign the contract and talk with Natalya and, you know, do some trash talk and whatever. She mentioned that she has her sparring partner of her own, and that is Natty's former partner for a little while on the main roster, Shayna Baszler. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the second biggest pop of the night you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I thought. That was really cool to see Shayna Baszler come back. Really cool to see her get that big of a pop, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, she gets a pop on the main roster or whatever, but man, I feel like so underutilized. I mean,
she would have gotten a bigger pop had they played her old NXT music, but
oh god,
story.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. But yeah, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, in this kind of just a lot of, I don't know, it was a fine segment. It was exactly what I expected it to be, with the exception of the Shayna Baszler, you know, introduction, that I didn't quite expect. But I mean, you know, just kind of a back and forth between Natalya and Lola Vice that kind of devolved into, you know, chaos. Fine, you know, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, I don't know if this feud necessarily warrants a match, like a contract signing and, you know, NXT underground stipulation and all of that stuff. So I'm looking forward to this in the sense that it's a gimmick match we don't get to see very often. And I want to see how they put it over because I've been hit or miss on underground matches. The last one we had with, oh my God, why can't I think of his name right now? We haven't seen him around in a little while either. Eddie Thorpe. I think it was Eddie Thorpe and Dijak, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I like going into that match was not looking forward to it. Coming out of that match, I went, holy crap, that was actually really good. Yeah, they utilized the ring without ropes and everything really well. And even the lumberjacks that they kind of had around the ring, if memory serves. But first couple underground matches and even Raw underground, like that did not do it for me at all. So I'm curious to see how the match unfolds, but I hate to say that I don't really care about Lola Vice and Natty, but I just don't feel like they've put enough into this to get me to care. Nothing against, you know, Natty and Lola Vice. I think it's just the way that they've been booked so far. I don't know. What say you, Bruce?
So one thing NXT has done really well is being able to book women's feuds that don't involve the title or don't have to be tertiary to the title, right? So we have something else coming up later that we'll talk about where that was another one, where there was another one like that tonight. And you have this where it's not about the title. It's about other things, right? I think this segment established what it needed to do in terms of each character getting over what they needed to say and it being within the bounds of their characters, right? So for Natalya, her thing is that she respects where Lola Vice has come from, her journey through MMA and to get here, but she doesn't think Lola Vice respects her journey in terms of coming to the dungeon and being one of the last trainees of the famed dungeon. So for Natalya, being the boat, as they call her, having that kind of respect is a big thing. And for her having that utter disrespect directed at her from Lola Vice, as she perceives it, is something that she just can't forgive. And for Lola Vice, she said, while I might shake my ass, I'll still kick your ass on next week. All right. So for her, it's about she knows who she is. And even though it's not who Natalya might like, it's also someone that she believes can whip her opponents. So I think they did establish those things well. What I want to do, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think we need to hear a bit more from Carmen Petrovic. I understand that, oh, it's the Canadian connection, and oh, she's my mentor, but really since they came together, we haven't heard much of Petrovic. We haven't really heard, I think right when they got together, Natalya said a little something about why she's there with Petrovic, and it might be the whole Canadian thing, but I wanted to delve a little more into exactly why, beyond the, you know, oh, she's a Canadian legend hero. Okay, so what specifically has Carmen Petrovic learned from Natalya? What is Natalya trying to do here with Carmen Petrovic in terms of both of their careers? I think there needs to be a little more there. And then, of course, seeing Shayna Baszler back was a tremendous, tremendous gift for all of us who have been watching NXT for so long. If we remember, coming off Asuka and then Ember Moon, Shayna Baszler is the one that had the dominant reigns, and her reign was essentially, if you look at the Rhea Ripley story and when she became the champion in NXT, and you compare it to how Cody Rhodes kind of became champion, they are similar, not the terms in terms of the length of the story, but it took Ripley multiple times. Shayna Baszler was the big baddie who couldn't be beat. And then the person that had all the fan support finally won it out and got the big baby face celebration.
Shayna Tom Stope
was
with
there.
Tom.
Yeah, exactly. And
Tom got to celebrate in the ring.
Mm-hmm. And so when they, I wonder if they'll get to AYB at that point. I don't know. Maybe not, because they were already covering the show at that point. I think their plan is to stop at the point that they started covering the show. But it's one of those seminal moments in NXT history. And Shayna Baszler was an integral part of NXT being what we think of NXT, especially during that time. The women's division is what a lot of wrestling fans came to watch. And she was really the anchor that helped. And that helped from going outside of Asuka and the Four Horsewomen, and Asuka, and then leading into the Rhea Ripley, the Bianca Belair stage of the women's title picture. And for a lot of people, she was why they watched the show. She was the main event. Her style, how she really brought her MMA and her knowledge of catch wrestling and submission to the ring was just unparalleled in NXT. And she really knew how to channel that viciousness into her character and remain in that character. So it was really good to see her. And like you said, I'm really glad that she got this sort of reception that she did because of how important she is to the history of the show. And there are, you know, talk about the draft. She could be one of those that they draft back to NXT and she just runs rampant on people.
God, I hope so.
I would love to see a match between her and Roxanne Perez, honestly. And especially a heel Roxy versus a Shayna Baszler, who no matter how dastardly she is going to be cheered by the fans. Yeah, I think that's a match I really would like to see.
I didn't know I wanted to see it until just now. Yeah, sign me up. Sign me up. I want that. Also, 74. 74 is the number of R's that you put at the end of Baszler's name.
You counted that many? Holy hell.
I did. I was actually very surprised. 74. I got like 80-something the first time, and I counted again, and then 74. I counted the third time, 74. But anyway, 74.
I was pretty excited.
He was 74 hours worth of excited, guys. 74. All right. Let's see. What else do we have here? We have Jada Parker versus Fallon Henley. Jada Parker with OTM. This match came about when earlier Fallon Henley was backstage with Thea Hale and one other person. I'm trying to find it in the notes. Who was it? Kalani Jordan. That's right.
And a gaggle of people in the back.
Gaggle of people behind them in the locker room. Thea Hale was basically saying how grateful she was that she has, you know, people in her life like Fallon Henley and Kalani Jordan, Andre Chase, Duke Hudson, you know, to help her succeed and yada, yada, feel good, positive moment. Jada, I forget exactly what it was that set Jada Parker off now that I think about it.
It was just the entirety of the whole goody, goody. I've been so thankful for all this. From the very beginning, she had this staying face on, like, what's going on here?
So, all right, because that's kind of what I thought. And then I'm like, I was saying to myself, like, maybe I just missed something. But Jada Parker basically just kind of stood up and was like, yeah, I've had enough of this positive nonsense. Kind of devolved into a bit of a kerfuffle. Matter of fact, again, my buddy who got back into wrestling, they said to me, I love how every time Thea Hale's on TV, it just devolves into into violence. And the past few weeks, it's kind of how it's been. That wound up leading into match tonight, between Jada Parker and Fallon Henley. Jada Parker got the win 4 minutes and 38 seconds approximately with the running hip check. I thought this was a decent match. Again, short match, only 4.5 minutes. But I think it was pretty good to kind of showcase what Jada Parker can do. We all know what Fallon Henley can do at this point. I mean, she's her kind of short career, I guess, she's kind of being positioned as the veteran in the locker room, in terms of what they're talking about on TV anyway. I kind of have a feeling they probably think about her like that backstage with kind of the position that they've put her in. I don't think that they'd be telling that story if there wasn't some grain of truth to it, backstage. Could be wrong, but I that's my perception anyway. So I feel like, Jada Parker, she's still relatively green, relatively new, trying to get her, get her legs under her. So I think Fallon Henley, good opponent for her. And I thought they both looked really good here. Again, not a five-star match by any stretch, but, for what it was and what it was supposed to do, I think they gave a pretty good service. There was something else that I wanted to say about this match, and I forget what it was, so I'm going to try and think about it while you talk about it. Or not. Was I muted this whole time? Ha ha! I just got a text message from Bruce saying that his power went out. All right. So, okay. Bruce will be back. What was I just talking about here? I don't know. Cause I got thrown off. So let me, we were talking about Jada Parker and, riveting stuff, guys, right now, riveting stuff as I figure out what's going on. But let me kind of get back to, I guess, what we were talking about here. That's, we're talking about Jada Parker, Fallon Henley. Those are kind of my thoughts on that. If Bruce is able to get back at some point, we will, we'll get his thoughts on Jada Parker versus Fallon Henley. We'll keep going here. We have the family, Tony D'Angelo and, Channing Stacks Lorenzo, and Luca Cristofino. I forgot this was a six-man tag, versus the Okada Catch Crew, Charlie Dempsey, Miles Bourne, and Damon Kemp. We had the family go over about 11 minutes and 5 seconds with a spine buster, which I thought this was a fun match. I don't want to say this was my match of the night, but I don't know. Maybe it was. It may have been. I don't know why I was into this match as much as I was, but I really like, I don't know. I was kind of, again, I was talking with my friend, my friend Jovan, talking about NXT and everything tonight. And, he was kind of pumped for this. So maybe that's why I was a little bit pumped for it. But D'Angelo and coming off of the NXT title picture, his title match against Ilya Dragunov, the last pay-per-view. Hey, we have Bruce back, I think.
Yeah, Bruce. I'm back. Sorry.
There
so,
we go.
Fine. Yeah, we think that the upstairs neighbor must have gotten something new upstairs because we've done nothing different. I've done nothing different the past couple of weeks, but it just seems like when we have AC out here and PS5 going, all of a sudden now the power wants to shut off at certain points. But again, this is how I've been doing the show for 2 years, so I don't know why it's been doing this. Sorry about that. What were we talking about?
I was talking about the Jada Parker match. With Fallon Henley there. So if you want to jump in and give your thoughts, I just started to move on to the family versus No Quarter Catch Crew, but we can go back to that.
Yeah, real quickly. You couldn't have described Jada Parker getting in the face of Fallon Henley any wider than you did. Oh, I am sick of this positive nonsense. I stifled the internal laugh there when he said that.
I don't think I could be any whiter, so,
Alabaster after all. So, to me, the line of the night came during this segment when after Jada Parker got in, found Henley's face, Henley goes, "Do we have a problem?" And Jada Parker goes, "We can. What's up?" And I just started laughing so hard doing my report because it was she didn't miss a beat. She was like, "Yeah, we can. What's up? Let's go." And that led to this match, and shenanigans aside, because I think that there was interference from the outside between. Oh no! What happened was just a clean victory, running hip check. I like the fact that Parker is using that running hip check as her finisher. I also like that after she threw Fallon Henley into the middle rope throat first, she immediately went to the running hip check. She didn't give any sort she didn't give any quarter, so to speak, and really laid it there to Fallon Henley. So I really like both of these women. And I keep saying Fallon Henley is who I'm picking to win the North American Women's Championship Tournament. I just feel like
I think she deserves it.
The exact type of person you want to be the first champion of that mid-card title. and to really establish what that title is going to become and how we should view it. So I really think she is the person that should win it. Now, I could definitely hear arguments for other people. I know Thea Hale is someone that people are really behind in terms of winning that title, but to me, the person that I would definitely put that title on first is Fallon Henley. And I also think I would do that, as I said last week, with an accompanying heel turn. So the match itself, yeah, didn't get too long to get into it. They worked fine. You know, Parker's still improving, but she is really improving rather quickly. And
yeah,
is another somebody that I'm excited to see into moving into the future, because when it comes to character, when it comes to confidence, when it comes to promos, I have no issues with Jada Parker. She is fantastic right now already in terms of that. Like, the fact that she is only a couple months into her stay on NXT, and this character just seems, it just seems like she understands what this character is supposed to be in relation not just to OTM, but to what she's supposed to be. And then I also made the analogy here after the match that she's kind of like Rhea Ripley in Judgment Day, in the fact that she's one of the, she wasn't the first person added to the group, but she's quickly become the person that we look to as the leader of the group. Right? At least I look at her as the person that is the head of OTM. It's not Bronco, it's not Lucian, and it's definitely not Scripps. It's Jada Parker. She is to me who runs the show with those four, right? And it looked like that tonight too, where she was leaving them out there and they're following her lead, right? I really like the presence. That's what I'm looking for. That's the word I was looking for. The presence of Jada Parker, really incredible considering how little time she's had in NXT. It's going to serve her a long way into the future. And I really feel like, I don't want her. I can see her being in the tournament as to be a heel to put over a face, just like she did in the women's breakout tournament where we were first introduced to her. But I think the best path is to keep her out. Right now, you already have a heel like her who is taking losses, who can be the one to put over a face like that. And that's unfortunately where you have Davenport. But you also have Kiana James available, or Izzy Dane that you could do that with, a JC Jane, a Jasmine Nix. I would rather they keep Jada Parker and Blair Davenport out of the tournament and have them just go on separate streaks where they maybe lead to a path to each other or lead to a path with Sol Ruka again. So to me, really liking the women's division, how they're handling that. And the fact, again, that we have so many feuds that don't have anything to do with the championship. And while we always talk about, yeah, the championship, that's what you should be fighting for, sometimes in life you do have things that you can't always focus on the main goal, right? So
yeah.
I like how – and we
you
always
take your side quest sometimes.
And we always see in the men's division, right? So to me, I like the fact that NXT has done a great job of maintaining that sort of the mid-card women's division while also making sure that it's believable and not having to be connected to a title.
All right, and so I started giving my thoughts about the family versus No Quarter Catch Crew. I don't remember what the hell I said at this point, because honestly, I got so thrown off by what was going on and then trying to read my text messages and figuring out where my notes went. I didn't really say a whole lot, but yeah, so, you know, kind of going back to, so we had the family win with 11 minutes and 5 seconds here. I Luca Cristofino is one that you know, I'm keeping my eye on. He's I think I see something there. I definitely see something there. I don't know what the ceiling is for the Luca Cristofino character in terms of being a consigliere and all of that. But being in that position, like, let's say the family, you know, rises kind of up the ranks a bit more, you know, potentially like Luca turning on the Don at some point, you know, could be kind of cool. We're a long way from there right now. But there's something there with Luca Cristofino. I really like the way that he works in the ring. I really like the way he sells. The fact that he can go there in those brown leather shoes and mix it up, more power to him. There's a couple other things that I said, you know, before you came back. So let me throw it to you and get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, Cristofino still stands out every time he's out there to to channel a former NXT tag team. He is like a whirling dervish when he's in the ring.
Ooh.
Thought you might
Aiden
like that
English,
one.
Simon Gotch. Anyway,
exactly that. Thought you might like that one. Now, much more of a whirling dervish than their finisher was. But yeah, he's just full of energy. My thing with him, and it's what I always look at with a lot of the either younger or inexperienced wrestlers, and I always go back to this example because he's the main one for me when I was growing into my more wrestling knowledge, and that's just by my fandom. But it's pacing, and I think about AJ Styles and Impact and TNA, right? And his thing was just going, 100% the whole time. If you want to go back even further, it's always the Kid Dynamite thing, right? You don't want to just keep going 100% the entire time. You've got to learn to have pace and levels. I mean, say what you want about Randy Orton, but he's had a 20-year career because he understands you don't have to do all that at all times, right? So with Chris Stefano, that's my big thing for him is what will the pacing be like? Can he slow it down? What does it look like when he does have to slow it down? The few matches that I've seen with him involved, he's been sort of the – not a hot tag – but he's been more of the fiery speedster in the match, which is kind of funny considering you have Stax right there. But Stax is usually the one taking all the bumps and building the heat for the hot tag. So to me, the big negative about this match is, of course, the black hole of charisma. Damon Kemp, he threw some of the weakest worked punches I've ever seen in my life tonight.
Yeah.
I really don't know why they keep trying. With the Stevenson's brother, the Stevenson brothers, I guess, because Gable Stevenson, obviously, we haven't seen him in how long because there's just really nothing there. And here we have Damon Kemp, and when he speaks, even when they do edited segments, the fact that those are the best takes they have for him is really, really unfortunate because they never come off well. So nobody in No Quarter Cast really stood out to me in the match in a positive way. The only negative, of course, was David Kemp. I think there's a helicopter flying above the skies right now. Sorry. And then
you can't hear it if it makes you feel any better.
Okay, no, I felt that's because the vibrations were really making me feel weird. So the when we moved to the family and outside of Christofino, I thought Tony D'Angelo had one of his better outings in a while tonight. And he looks good, and it could be the fact that, it's not a singles match. He's in a tag team match where you can split some of that, and he can come in and do his thing. I do think that they have an opportunity here with his spine buster to make that into a finisher, and if they do it well, they could put it over just like they did with the World's Strongest Slam from Mark Henry, which, if you think about it, he's literally just lifting them up and just dropping them back down on the mat. It doesn't really look impactful, but the fact that it was Mark Henry, the World's Strongest Man, and you have him coming down on him, that worked. I think the spine buster he used tonight is an example of something like that they could use, a really good, strong, impactful one-arm spine buster, Ron Simmons style. I do like that. And I do think he showed more spark and more life in this match, which is, again, maybe it's the fact that it's not a singles match and he doesn't have to pace himself out for a 10, 15, 20-minute main event match. But I do think that D'Angelo had a really good night tonight.
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking to myself, who's got the better spine buster, Ron Simmons or Arn Anderson? And
it depends on what you like, because Triple H is more of the Arn Anderson style, while we're seeing Boba Femi and Tony D'Angelo do more of the Ron Simmons style.
Yeah, and
then you got the Batista and the Rock style too. So
that's very true. It's very true. I've always loved Ron Simmons' spinebuster. Like always.
Bobby Lashley
always
does the best one actually. Bobby Lashley does the best impression of Ron Simmons.
Yeah,
spinebuster.
You know. Yeah, he really does. He really does. Anyway, now I'm going to stop thinking about spinebusters. Let's go to our opening match of the night. We had a triple threat. Roxanne Perez versus Lyra Valkyria versus Tatum Paxley for the NXT Women's Championship. We saw Perez take the win at 12 minutes and 3 seconds after Tatum Paxley hit a 450 splash from the top rope onto Lyra Valkyria. Roxy comes out of nowhere and just rolled Paxley off of Valkyria after she hit the splash right up into a pin. I thought the finish to this was fantastic, to be honest. It really plays off of kind of I'm using the word weaselly, and I don't know if it's really the best word to describe Roxanne, but that's what I'm going to say. kind of the weaselly heel that she's kind of becoming. It was, she saw the opportunity there. She capitalized on it and picked up the win from, you know, essentially somebody else's offense. I thought the way that they pulled that off was brilliant. I think this was the match of the night. I really liked the tag match. I know when Bruce was playing with his breaker box. I said that the Braun breaker box. The tag match was my second favorite match of the night. This was my favorite match of the night. It was the opener. I thought all three of them had a really good outing. Historically, and I've gone on record a million times saying I don't normally like triple threats because sometimes you don't have, one person's just taking a nap while the other two are in the ring. But I thought they did a really good job of keeping everybody involved in this match, where I wasn't thinking to myself, hey, I haven't seen Lyra Valkyrie in like 5 minutes, I think they did a pretty good job kind of rotating everybody in and keeping everybody involved. So you kind of didn't get, that feeling. Roxanne picking up the win, I think makes the most sense. She just won it. She's had a great story to kind of get there, to the NXT championship. So winning or losing it this soon, I think would be a travesty, although it would be really kind of fun, I guess, to watch Roxanne kind of complain a little bit and try and get her rematch. It would probably make some entertaining TV, but I think this is the better way to get Roxy over and kind of show her off as a bigger threat than that. What else was I going to say? There's something else. Tatum Paxley, I really like what they're doing what Tatum Paxley is doing with herself, really. This kind of different gimmick, that she's been running with, kind of crazy. I mean, it's not super unique. We've seen things like this in the past, throughout wrestling. But I think she's pulling it off pretty well. The 450 splash that she pulled off tonight, I thought looked really good. I was not expecting that. I thought she was going to go for like an elbow or something, And then she pulls off a like beautiful 450 splash. So, props to her for that. I don't know if I knew she had it in her. Her street cred for me, I guess. Yes, I'm very white. Her street cred went up for me here tonight. On the opening triple threat.
Well, to your point on Paxley, real quick, nothing in her style or her character has indicated to us that she does anything like this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, while you said you enjoyed the match, you thought all three came off well. I thought two came off well. I'm just still not sold on Valkyria. I don't know what it is about her offense and what her character. I don't know. Just to me, I just can't buy it. From the beginning, I've been saying I thought her title reign was bland. I've been sort of not against the title reign. I just wasn't buying into the title reign. Want to go back to a little Seth Rollins quote here. I wasn't buying in. So her aside, I felt like Roxanne Perez, especially, and Tatum Paxley were really good tonight. Paxley was surprising. I've liked Paxley a lot from when she was in the breakout tournament. And sure, yes, it's I guess interesting would be the most positive word to say about it. It's something different, and they're trying. And again, I liked how she framed it last week that she's not a stalker of people. She's a stalker of the women's championship, and it just so happens that the women's championship is held by people, right? So to me, I feel like this was a breakout match for Tatum Paxley. The thing about the 452 is she got distance on it. It wasn't like she they were set up right next in the corner. Valkyria was maybe a third of the way across the ring, and Paxley hit it, and she didn't just hit it, but the rotation on the 450 was perfect. She landed perfectly across Valkyria, no over-rotation, no under-rotation. It was literally right as she became parallel with the ring that she hit Lyra Valkyrie with the 450, and I thought it was really beautifully done. And then Perez coming right in and getting the jackknife leverage pin right after she hit that move was a nice touch, and then immediately running out of the ring to grab her title and go to the entrance. And this also goes back to what I had said, I don't know how long ago it was, but I mentioned the fact that, you know, Roxanne Perez, she gets in your face and she's, you know, she doesn't back down from fights, but this character is going to devolve eventually into doing anything she can to win the title and to retain the title. And we're starting to see that here now, right? This was the first match since she started going back toward the title where she didn't win with either Pop Rocks or Crossface, and it was a roll-up. And then the whole Weasel thing about running out of the ring immediately to grab the title, posing outside, rubbing it in the faces of the baby faces. So that was redundant. We're starting to get that slow de-evolution, which is going to be further exacerbated by her not being drafted on Friday or Monday coming to, you know, you could show a bit of it next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after when you have that first real post-draft NXT, since, you know, Spring Break is already set, the show's already been in the motion. Now, after the reset of the draft, you can start a whole new season, essentially, the new era. I can't wait for her to just get on the mic and lament the fact and berate people and say, you don't know what I'm here, I'm being stuck, I'm being held down, yada, 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 and continue that development into a more Weasley champion until she finally gets her comeuppance. But not the Weasley champion in terms of how Ric Flair used to be Weasley champion, but a Weasley champion in terms of becoming more and more paranoid, right? Almost like when Becky Lynch had that little bit of a heel run, I think it was, where she just became more and more paranoid about losing that championship. I think that's what we're going to see with Roxanne Perez, and I do like how she continues to evolve in terms of the character. And again, one of the best transitions to me in the ring of face to heel in WWE over the past several years that I can remember. Again, she's not out there doing all the flippy stuff that made her a good face that people glommed onto. It's limb work. It's submissions. It's getting in their face. It's talking smack. She's doing all those right things, and her nickname as the Prodigy is very fitting.
Yeah, you know, again, like, I know I brought him up a million times tonight, but, you know, my buddy just getting back into wrestling. You know, what he said to me tonight, what they said to me tonight, was Roxanne Perez is their favorite heel in all of WWE right now. You know, and they're just getting into NXT. This is the second or third consecutive week they've watched it. You know, in that was really cool for me to hear because, you know, just, you know, what, 6-8 months ago, you know, with Roxy as a face and doing what she was doing, you know, she was kind of just by the wayside and wasn't really working for me. It was working for some people, wasn't really working for me, but as a heel, I think she's killing it. You know, I think she's finally kind of finding her lane here. And I think once, you know, the inevitable happens and she does a turn and becomes a face again, I think this is all going to be a massive net positive for her. You know, fans behind her and kind of just being able to adapt that character as time goes on in a better way is going to take her pretty far. So yeah, I'm loving what they're doing with Roxy right now and the direction that she's going. I kind of want to see something like what you said in, you know, the fact that, you know, we might wind up seeing her, you know, kind of paranoid that she's going to lose the title a la Becky Lynch. Or, you know, the first thing went through my head is, you know, Tommaso Ciampa holding Goldie, you know, and you know, something akin to that I think would be really cool. And almost kind of even play into the Tatum Paxley character a little bit too, you know, with Tatum saying, you know, she's the stalker of the women's championship. I could even see, you know, Roxy kind of getting paranoid about that, you know, maybe even for the next, you know, her next feud here, Lyra is probably going to go up. So this might be the last time we end up seeing Lyra, you know, as a full-time NXT talent, but, I think that's that. I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show here tonight, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can check the things that I do at NateLindberg.com, on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it. I think we're still calling it X. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Hazelwood. Find me at B_Lee253 in my report about the Torch. And sorry about the power issues, everybody. I guess I just can't play my PS5 with the AC on anymore, which is really going to suck come summertime here in Hawaii when it's really freaking hot.
It is currently 42 degrees here in New Hampshire, so
oh,
I don't know.
I think it's probably like in the low 80s here right now.
Man, I just took my moped out of storage. I want to go bombing around the beach, and it's still way too cold for that. I live like 5 minutes from the beach. I just want to go bomb around the beach. Anyway, guys, I'm not going to sit here and complain about my life. Hopefully Kelly is feeling better next week, and hopefully we have all three of us back here on the mic. But if not, you'll have two of us. So at least two of us will talk to you then. Take care.